So as Jim said, I will be talking about how we used the CASPER method, and really this was part of our community health assessment. So there's a lot that I could talk about between the survey methodology, the data, the lessons learned, but because I only have 15 minutes or so, I'm just going to sort of do a lot of it all. And if you want more details about the survey, I have links or we can talk, or if you want more data, come talk to me afterwards. So a little bit of background, starting with where I'm from. Johnson County, Kansas is in the Kansas City metro region. We're pretty big for our area, our neck of the woods, with 584,000 residents. We are oftentimes the healthiest county in the state. We are fairly wealthy with our median household income of $76,000. We have about 6% poverty, and we are 87% white. So a lot of people, both in and outside of our county, sort of view Johnson County as doing really well, and, you know, what do you really have to worry about? And it is true, we do well, but if you live there, if you work there, and you sort of understand what's going on in the community, there's other stories that are going on. And so one of those stories is of poverty. So in the past 15 years, we have seen poverty increase at 126%, while our total population has only grown by 26%. So like it probably happens in a lot of your communities, poverty clusters, and so those areas tend to have greater health disparities. In addition to poverty increasing, we've also seen a great increase in our Hispanic population, with our Hispanic population increasing by 131% over those 15 years, compared to our non-Hispanic population of 21%. So in considering our community health assessment, we wanted to try and understand what was really going on in our community. And we could go about this several ways, but we decided to sort of do a poverty focus. The reason we did this was fairly intentional. One was our county commissioners are six white men all over the age of about 50. And I think is what happens in a lot of counties, there can be some victim blaming if we're talking about us versus them, but poverty, they've gotten behind to a certain extent with putting it on their platform. So we knew that we could talk about poverty with them and it would hopefully be meaningful. So what we decided to do for our community health assessment was we really wanted to conduct in-person interviews. For us, it was very important that we talk to people that usually don't have a voice during this process. I think when we do forums, we do surveys, people who are really invested in the process tend to come to the table, and people who are busy working or, you know, really are being affected by our policies tend to not get a seat or not have an option to raise their voice. So for us, we decided to do in-person interviews, and after doing some research, we decided to move forward using CASPER. And as I was looking, there's a lot of different sessions today on CASPER, so this is one of many. It was originally designed by the WHO with the intention of identifying immunization rates in rural Africa. It was then adopted by CDC really for disasters, where if, you know, say post-tornado, a community needed to get out, talk to individuals in the community and find out what the needs were, this could be used. It doesn't take a lot of prep time, it doesn't take a lot of money, it doesn't take a lot of, it does take some effort, I will say. But it's rapidly deployable, and then it's statistically valid within 10% of the population for whatever that selected geography is. So since that time, it's really started getting picked up by community health assessments. North Carolina's, several counties in North Carolina have used it. Some counties in Texas have used it. Another county in Kansas has also used it. So this is how we decided to move forward. So a little bit of methods. As I said, I'm not going to go too deep into the survey methodology. You can find it. You can Google it. CDC has some great resources. But for us, we decided to conduct two sampling frames. And we went about doing this with our what we're calling our high poverty zip codes and our low poverty zip codes. And these are some examples of neighborhoods in Johnson County. So you can see sort of the difference between nicely groomed lawns and sidewalks versus no sidewalks, you know, having wall units. So this is our county. We have, as I said, we're suburbans. So we have several interstates that run through. These are the eight counties we consider our high poverty zip codes. And if you look at where people in poverty live, each one of these dots represents 10 individuals living below the poverty level. So you can see how they sort of cluster along one of our interstates, I-35 corridor that runs diagonally. Now, because we all know that even though poverty clusters, people live in poverty everywhere, this is not a perfect method because people who don't live in poverty are living in our high poverty zip codes and people who live in poverty are in our low poverty zip codes. So while we did find some differences, I think that the numbers overall are a little muted because we do have individuals of different socioeconomic statuses living within our zip codes. However, for our ability to talk to our stakeholders, to present this to our community health coalition as well as our county commissioners, we went about doing it this way. So for cluster selection, we followed the CASPER methodology, which is a modified sampling where you do 30 clusters selected with proportional to size, and then 7 random households were interviewed within each of those clusters. For our survey design, we utilized questions from various sources and took them from validated surveys whenever possible, and then we ran them through some individuals in our health department who were not part of this survey process to make sure it was understandable. I will admit that we made it a little too long at the beginning. You know, it's sort of that balance of how trying to get all the information you want but make it short enough that people are really willing to participate, and we maybe erred a little bit too much on getting everything we wanted. So after the first weekend, because we had some low cooperation rates, we condensed it and found that that increased our cooperation rates among our residents. To collect the data, we designed the survey in EpiInfo and used the CollectSmart app, which was created by the University of North Carolina's Institute of Public Health. We loaded them onto LG tablets that were connected to the internet, and then we conducted the analysis using SAS. To increase participation in our community, we did an extensive communications plan. So we sent postcards to every single household that was in those clusters. Excuse me. And it said, people in blue t-shirts are going to be coming. They want to know your opinion. Please help us out. As you can see, these are some of our volunteers. We had fancy incentives, that water bottle that our volunteer is holding. We gave those away. I know. We have extras if you want them. And we put some information from our partners, our stakeholders, in that. We also play to their sense of civic duty. In Johnson County, we have a lot of buy-in from our residents. They believe in what the county does. And so when we went to them and we knocked on their doors, we tried to really talk about how they were going to change what was going on. As I said, we have an increasing Hispanic population in our community, so we knew that we would have language barrier with our surveys. So we looked at our census blocks that we had selected and identified those with high Hispanic populations, and then we specifically recruited Spanish-speaking volunteers and sent them into those communities so that they could conduct surveys in Spanish, and we found that incredibly helpful. Another thing we did was we took the census, has a sheet that says, I speak this language. I think there's something like 90 languages on it, and we laminated it and so that they could mark whatever language that was that they wanted to speak, and we had intentions of going back with translation service to conduct the interviews. That did not happen. We did not run across that in Johnson County. However, one of our partners, we did this for one of our nonprofit hospitals, and they ran into that in their catchment area. So we found it very helpful. So we had originally set this up to do 3 weekends in October, where we would do a half a day on Thursday and then Fridays and Saturday full days. And then we found that because we did not get quite the number of volunteers we wanted, that we were unable to complete all the surveys, and also because of our low cooperation rate during that first weekend. So then we had cleanup days and had great, great volunteers out of our county health department who, anytime they had an afternoon where they didn't have meetings or didn't have clients, they would go out and conduct surveys. So it actually worked out really well because I think we had a variety of times where people were out in the community, some after hours. We found that Fridays when schools were out were a great time. Parents were home with kids. But it did take us a while to get the surveys completed that we needed. For our volunteers, the individuals who conducted our surveys, we recruited through various sources. Other county departments were really valuable, our Parks and Rec department, because we had some built environment questions and some park questions on there. Our community health coalition, and then we also tapped into our School of Public Health, and that sort of trickled down to our undergraduate population at the University of Kansas. We incentivized our volunteers. We gave away gift cards for every day we did surveys. We did drawings, so you either got a $50 or $100 gift card to Target. We gave them Hy-Vee, which is a grocery store for us, a Hy-Vee gift card so they could go get lunch if it was a full day. If we asked them to drive their own car, we gave them a gift card to buy gas. And then we conducted just-in-time training, which meant we did a lot of trainings every morning that we sent volunteers out. And then we tried to pair them up so that you weren't sending out 2 undergrads, because when we did that, it turned into a disaster. Undergrads who want extra credit, probably not next year. But, you know, doing intergenerational, different departments, county employees with non-county employees, and it was really great. And we actually had some relationships that were built through that as well. So for this, and with any community health assessment, we gather a lot of secondary data as well. I'm going to just present some death certificate data, which comes from the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. It's secondary data for us because we're a decentralized state, and because zip code is reported on those death certificates. We were able to match them to our high poverty and our low poverty zip codes. So as I said, I'm just going to run through just a little bit of the data. So first, some summary. We got completion rates of 93% and 87% in our high poverty and a low poverty zip codes, respectively. Our cooperation rate, so that is the number of people that we actually spoke to. So when you knock on a door, somebody answers, how many of them are you able to survey? How many of them are willing to survey? So we had 49% and 40%, which was below the goal of 60%. And then our contact rates, so that's the number of doors you actually knock on, how many of those do you get somebody to do surveys, were below the goal of 20%. This can lead to biases in your data if you're not matching your demographics. I have some of that data at the end, which I probably will not have time for. But if you're interested to see how well we matched up to our demographics of our community, I'm happy to talk to you about it. It turns out pretty well. We surveyed our 18 to 24-year-olds, over-surveyed our 65-plus by a little bit, and slightly more females than males. But on the whole, really good representation across the board. And I think these goals are probably achievable when you talk about post-disaster, when sort of those needs are there. When you're doing community health assessments, probably not surprising it's a little lower. So just a couple of quick data points that I thought were really interesting. One of the things we wanted to get at was chronic stress, which we know the allostatic load causes hormonal changes, can lead to chronic disease, can lead to premature death. So one of the questions we asked our residents about was whether or not they were worried about paying their monthly bills. And we saw that a much larger number, not really surprisingly, in our high poverty zip codes reported that they were always or usually worried about paying their monthly bills compared to our low poverty zip codes. We saw similar results when we asked about if they had a large medical expense, which we know can tip a family that's sort of right on the edge into poverty. We also asked some questions about race and ethnicity. 6% of our individuals in our high poverty zip codes reported that they were felt they were treated worse at work compared to people of other races. We also asked this question about healthcare, if they felt they were treated worse in healthcare, and we saw a similar result where it was statistically significant that individuals in our high poverty zip codes, again, more likely to be Hispanic, feel that they are being treated differently or worse in these environments, which again can lead to chronic stress. We had a couple of healthcare access questions. We see a disparity in the number of individuals who are uninsured in our population. We have about an 8% uninsurance rate in the county as a whole. But 13% of the individuals in our high poverty zip codes are uninsured compared to 5% in our low poverty. This question came out of our preparedness module. So, we needed money to conduct this. So we went to our preparedness section and said, hey, you want to help? And so we asked questions about whether or not individuals had enough food, water for 3 days, if they had a battery, flashlights, et cetera. One of the questions was about prescription medication. And this is what came out of it. 13% of individuals in our high poverty zip codes said they did not have enough medication for 3 days. So if you think about how this relates to chronic disease and medication adherence, if you don't have enough medication for 3 days, what's the likelihood you're taking your blood pressure medication as you should? So sort of an incidental finding with our preparedness component, but I thought very interesting. And so finally, health outcomes. Just a quick look at our disease mortalities. This is the death certificate data I talked about. These are our 10 leading causes of death. Unsurprisingly, a lot of chronic disease. 5 of the 10 leading causes of death have greater mortality rates in our high poverty zip codes compared to our low poverty zip codes. Now again, these are heterogeneous zip codes, and so if we're seeing these differences, what would it really be like if we could just isolate the people in poverty, and what are their numbers looking like? So wrapping up, there were definitely some limitations, as I said, geography by zip codes. We did have low cooperation and contact rates, but again, our demographics match pretty well. Our survey was only 8 individuals who are 18 and older, so we're still missing that childhood population, which I think is a big limitation for a lot of us, for a lot of our data sources. So our survey lessons learned, if you're going to do this, recruit volunteers early. It was the biggest barrier that we had. It takes a lot of people to get out in the community and do this. Keep surveys short. We actually saw our cooperation and our contact rate increase after that first weekend once we condensed it. And consider local sports teams or large events in your community when selecting survey days. We had planned this for October, thinking we'd be fine, really good weather. The Royals won the World Series. So we actually had volunteers who were in people's living rooms watching the games during the playoffs, conducting these surveys between innings. But people were going out to get the game, and so it was a challenge to get people on to participate for that reason. So summary, this is not a perfect methodology, and I'm well aware, but for us, it really gave us an opportunity to talk about poverty in a way that people in our community could understand, particularly our county commissioners. And by really pairing this data with ACS data, you know, if we look at median income, it's different. If we look at some of those key ACS variables, it's an opportunity to talk about things and have data that you were not able to have otherwise. So I think that it was a really valuable tool for us. And here are the resources, and I'm assuming you guys will have the presentation. And again, Google, that's what I do. So this is my contact information, and I guess I'd be happy to take any questions.
Yeah, we have about a minute for questions.
Yeah. So our initial communication did say in the postcards, it did say in these 3 weekends, so that was our original plan. We did not continue the messaging for our cleanup days. We also did social media campaigns as well as press releases, articles in our Johnson County magazine. So we did a lot of other things, and the great thing with social media is you can do it as often as you want. So.
And one other question. Mm-hmm. When you talked about shortening the survey, how many questions did you shorten it down
to? That is an excellent question. I believe our survey ended up at 45 questions, and North Carolina recommends 50 at the max. And so one of the things that we did to condense was instead of doing a four-part Likert scale, strongly agree, strongly disagree, we just shortened it to agree and disagree, because I think that a lot of times when we do analyses anyway, we condense it to that. And so for ease sake, because we really wanted that data, we decided that that was the route we wanted to take. Other questions?
Okay.
Or maybe
okay,
not?
Great.
Not
perfect.
Oh.